Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers Show. I am your host, Virginie Boone, along with my co-host, Carissa Cruz.
Hello.
President and CEO of The Wine Growers.
Yeah, make sure you get all the fancy titles.
I know. Do you have any others you wanted to add? PhD of sustainability.
Something.
Godmother of sustainability.
All around cool chick. Maybe.
Okay, all around. We'll just go with that. Yes, okay. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County.
Why are you laughing? I hear you giggling over there. That's not very nice.
Because I completely...
You hang out with me by choice, so really.
I know, and I completely agree. The cool chick of Sonoma County, yeah. So we're here to talk about Carissa.
Perfect.
And why
we got like
she's
an
such
hour?
A cool chick.
Perfect.
And also Sonoma County, where we both live.
Yes.
And get into trouble together. Such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Absolutely, which is really the theme of our show, The Good Stuff.
It is the theme of our show. We are here today to talk about something that doesn't always get talked about enough, I think. Merlot.
Merlot. I know. I do love a good Merlot.
I think most people do.
I know. They may not always admit it, but I think they do love it.
Well, we are going to be speaking with a couple of our friends from St. Francis Winery and Vineyards. Chris Loughton, the winemaker, is here to talk with us a little bit about what they're doing, how they're making Merlot at St. Francis and some of the different things that they have going on there.
I just heard some Merlot being opened.
That was like a case of Merlot. That was a magnum of
Merlot being opened. Yeah, I love it.
By our other guest, who manages the vineyards, director of vineyards, Jake Terrell, also of St. Francis Winery and Vineyards. So look at that.
Oh, such a good sound.
Are
you salivating out there, everyone?
I mean, it is Saturday. Right. Why not be thinking about what you're going to drink?
Is that why not or why not?
It's whatever you want.
I'm here all day. Okay.
Okay, so since we're here to talk about good stuff. How did we get here? How did this become our topic of conversation?
Well, you became my partner in crime about a year ago when you started writing a column for us called The Good Stuff. But really, it was inspired by a TED Talk that I was able to give about a year and a half ago titled Drink the Good Stuff. And sadly, born out of not a great story, but really becoming a way for me to think about life, which has been really, I think, inspiring for me and how I live. Having gone through the 2017 wildfires and having lost my home in it, one thing that really stood out was just a few days before the fires, my new boyfriend, now husband at the time, Steve Dutton, had come over. He had just finished harvest. And he brought this incredible vintage 1990 bottle of champagne, actually. And I wanted to save it because it was a Tuesday night and he was tired and I had gotten like sushi takeout and it wasn't worth this amazing bottle of wine. But he insisted, and I mean, we literally geeked out. We were like taking pictures of their glasses. We were newly dating, so forgive us all the cheesy, schmoozy, whatever, new relationship stuff. But we were newly dating, and so we were taking pictures of us, you know, with our glasses in front of the setting, you know, setting sun. And we actually wrote on the bottle, like dated the bottle, like last day of harvest, and you know, and all of that. And it was delicious. Very delicious. And then literally fast forward, you know, it was like 7 days later and that bottle is destroyed in the fires along with a lot of good bottles of wine. And I just had this moment standing there and being like, wow, if nothing else, I didn't waste the chance to try that wine last week. I am so thankful because it doesn't matter, the bottle is gone. I had that moment. That moment with Steve, just that moment in time, that memory now. And so for me, it was how I then thought about and inspired my conversation in the TEDx talk around drink the good stuff and how important it is to be able to live in the moment, still challenge yourself with what's next and what do you do for your community. And it's how we got to become sort of so close was during that time thinking about how do we move forward from this. But really reminding people out there, you know, tear off the tags on those clothes and wear them, don't save them. For all those women out there, don't just use your nice purse on the weekends. It's great to use on a Monday. And now we're inspiring. We're, you know, every week we're going to talk about what we're drinking on Tuesday nights because that's when you should be drinking. At least for Steve and I, we drink some of our best bottle of wines on Tuesday night.
Yeah. So, it was a lot about change the narrative.
I mean, the narrative.
You can look at things in a negative light or a positive light. What do you choose and how do you commit
for
to
sure.
your community? And I love that what you left was what's next.
What's next?
All right. Yeah. So what's next for us is when we come back from the break, we will be speaking with Chris and Jake from St. Francis about Merlot.
Which is already what's current for me because I'm drinking some Merlot.
Okay. Have joined us today on the Good Stuff Show. We are here with two people from St. Francis Winery and Vineyards. We have winemaker Chris Luton and vineyard manager Jake Terrell. We are we're here partly because I think during the month of October is an event that happens, I guess, that's called Merlot Me. And you are all a part of that. So can you maybe give us a quick, like, what is Merlot Me and how can people celebrate?
Yeah, I've never heard of Merlot Me.
Merlot Me, yeah.
I've heard of Drink Me.
It's all part of the same game that we're playing, right? Yeah, but well, thanks for having us in and happy to talk Merlot for sure. You know, for St. Francis, it's just part of our DNA, if you will, for the history of the winery and the brand. But Merlot Me, you know, like anything, if you're wondering what to do or what bottle to order or open up or purchase, you know, just Merlot Me, you know, like the waiter, I guess if the waiter comes up to the table and he's like,
that's,
you know,
simple.
Guys, what do you want for dinner tonight? And, you know, just, well, you know, hey, Merlot Me.
Is there a
something
hand
special.
Gesture with that? Like, do you slap?
We can come up with
or?
One. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely
some type of shorthand.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, something.
Well, okay. So, how did Merlot sort of Me, and I'm going to look right at you, Chris.
Okay.
Plus or minus hand gestures, whatever. Sure. How did Merlot Me start? And why is it important to St. Francis?
Well, I think ultimately it's important to us because our founder, Joe Martin, was really a pioneer with Merlot in Sonoma Valley here in Sonoma County. And so, like I said, it's part of who we are. And, you know, hey, let's just say Merlot's had a tough go for a long time. You know, oftentimes it is people forget they really enjoy drinking Merlot. So, you know, we got to get it out there, and it's catchy, Merlot Me. It started two M's. It kind of rolls off the tongue a little bit easily. You know, it's sort of unique, all these hashtags that are out there. You know, it can fit into that game as well. But, you know, for us, it just comes back to who we are and what we enjoy making, what we enjoy drinking, and what we enjoy talking about and getting into other people's hands.
I feel like there's like a side radio show. So we have like the Good Stuff and then there's Merlot Me.
Yeah.
Like that could be a whole segment on itself every week. I mean,
couple hours.
Couple hours.
It'll be the late night version.
Maybe we need to go later into the Saturday evening.
With banjos.
Possibly.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's a whole lot that could happen with Merlot Me. It does ring.
So was Joe Martin the founder of Merlot Me?
I think before it was cool to say it, yeah, he definitely was a founder of Merlot Me. He was way ahead of his time. You know, I don't know if those words were actually ever uttered from Joe, but, you know, definitely he wanted it to be a thing to stick around. So, you know, we just come up with new and inventive ways to, you know, promote the variety.
But St. Francis has such a storied history, which is partly why we were excited to have you both on the show. This whole Good Stuff show is about really being able to dive deep into the history, the people, the story. So talk a little bit more about Joe and the founding of the winery and Chris, even your background and when you joined.
Sure, yeah. I was, you know, fortunate to have a little bit of time with Joe. He's since passed. I've been now with the winery for 10 years. This will be my 10th harvest, you know. And so, you know, going back further, what led me to this spot and just falling in love with Sonoma County was, you know, just a kid in and who didn't really know about winemaking, didn't know about viticulture, just loved science and loved farming in general, just from a family background, just, you know, being, you know, sort of instilled in us. And so, like many of us who fall into the wine, you know, just sort of came across it one day. I took a class, Introduction to Winemaking, boom. You know, almost 20 years later, here I am, you know, with, you know, making some sparkling wine, you know, working in Napa Valley and really getting to know Merlot there, and now bringing that over to Sonoma County and really, you know, having that variety shine here as well. And so he, Joe Martin, our founder, you know, purchased a 100-acre, you know, ranch back in the 70s, and he just felt this, that region, that particular spot would do well for Merlot. And Chardonnay as well, and it stuck. He pioneered it, hired his first winemaker, Tom Mackey, who ultimately became known as the Master Merlot, and the ball just keeps rolling down the road. And so now I take this, you know, a pawn for the winery, and, you know, continuing to move this variety forward.
And now you're the Master of Merlot, correct?
Only my friends.
But, like, but Master Mackey is a little bit like it rolls. Sorry, Chris. Yeah. It just rolls a little more off the tongue.
I know. My middle name is Michael. So I can get an go. M in there if you
there
want.
There you go. Thank you. Okay. That
you could be the Master of Merlot, me.
I mean, there you
that would just be yours.
MMM.
Yeah.
There you go.
See? Yeah, nice. T-shirts coming afterwards.
Okay. Well, that would be good. We need some merchandise. So my understanding is that Joe and sort of St. Francis in general planted the first Merlot vineyard, is that right, in 1971?
Yeah, we you know, record keeping sometimes is not always
never
you know,
say that
lock in a box.
Never
right
say that. Once it's said on the show, it's fact.
So we like to say we pioneered it, one of the first
one
to
the
plant
first,
Merlot.
Absolutely.
There's definitely, you know, I think but taking it to a level that we have, definitely he established that. You know, he basically put 100 acres of Merlot in the ground when no one had that much at the time, and it was really looking, you know, forward.
Right.
Yeah.
And was he a Francophile? Was he inspired by Bordeaux? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are some of his favorite spots to travel to drink. That right bank was what inspired him here in the region where we are. That sort of afternoon cool breeze was very reminiscent to him of that region. And so he, you know, took a gamble and it paid off for him. And to this day, so it was a good spot for Merlot. We've done extensive research to prove what he just sort of felt at the time. We've sort of proved that, yeah, this ground is good for Merlot.
And so before St. Francis started making wine of its own, they were selling a lot of those grapes to other wineries. Are your fuzzy records showing, like, any wineries in particular? Were there some other brands that sort of helped make St. Francis Merlot important early
no,
on?
No, it's part of that black box. That's true. Yeah.
Can you make some up? Maybe you just say, like, well, Screaming Eagle had, you know.
Yeah, let's see. Brand's early 70s, right? It wasn't until 1979 that he actually came out with a wine in a bottle. So there was that sort of, you know, an 8-year range when it was going out into bottles. But no one, you know, we just don't have great written proof, unfortunately, but just more storytelling and passed on through the generations.
Mm-hmm. But it's fun that the 70s, right? We had Duff on our show last week, and, you know, he was celebrating his anniversary. I think he moved here in 1973 and hit like 50 years. So, like, the 70s were this, like, really, Virginia, I think you said Renaissance time in Sonoma County, but I do think it was that. And it's really cool that Merlot, and thinking about what's able to be grown well in Sonoma Valley, how that all connected. And you're still growing it today. So these decisions you're making back in the 70s, well, I'm literally drinking it today and, you know, 23. And I think that's really amazing. I mean, how have you seen, how's the winery evolved, you know, the leadership evolved, and, you know, what have you done, Chris, since you've joined? Because I know you've had a huge influence on the wines coming out of St. Francis. So talk about that, too.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, this
is that a big enough question
that's
for
big
you?
Enough, that's a little question.
So I just get it all out, and then I can go back to drinking. My job here is done.
She just likes to bunch her questions together.
I have a three-part question for Mr. Merlot me over here.
Yeah, so answer number one.
Answer number one. I mean, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, Joe Martin has since passed away, but, you know, we're still really feel like that family-run winery that he began with. You know, we are still family-owned by the Koff family, you know, and Jay can speak to this as well. that, you know, we were given a lot of purview and like a long leash when it came to looking at Merlot as a, you know, as you're looking at a vineyard that is aging and sort of basically falling apart. I mean, our guys had to wear hard hats in the vineyard to pick the fruit because there were so many, you know, dangerous things that they could run into. But so the opportunity to replant, take 100 acres and go to ground zero and to the scratch, the surface, and come up with something, you know, and go back in with Merlot was, you know, that's a lot of trust in myself from the family. That's a lot of trust from the family and the winery and everyone who obviously takes a great team to make, you know, all these wines. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that was quite impressive. And to think, okay, what are we going to do now? Because, you know, hopefully this vineyard exceeds my winemaking career and in the next generation hand down something that is truly special to Sonoma County and to St. Francis to keep, you know, Merlot going forward. And so we have a huge book of information that I read every night to go to sleep because it's full of this amazing dirt chemistry and everything. But
the good stuff.
Read the good stuff. Yeah, this is definitely requires glasses of wine.
The sleepy stuff.
Vineyard soul reports are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I'm answering some of your questions, but...
I was just trying to keep you busy for a
little
bit. Absolutely,
yeah. I mean, and, you know, we pride ourselves in making great Merlot, but also a lot of other varieties that, you know, hey, we're here in Sonoma County, beautiful location, the ocean, hills, mountains, valley floors. We've got it all, right?
We do.
We can do a lot of exciting, interesting things in the winemaking world, and we like to have fun with that, and we're allowed to. So I can't, you know, who's going to complain? I can't complain to have so many opportunities.
You're not allowed to complain on the good stuff.
That is,
we should have
stuff.
Told you that from the beginning.
That was good. That was not. I was not filing a complaint.
I am curious, as a winemaker, what were you looking for in a new vineyard source of Merlot? Were there things that I know we will get in a little bit more into the planting and the clones and sort of some of the decisions that Jake had to make. But what was important to you on the winemaking side of what this vineyard would produce after being replanted?
Yeah, I think someone was holding true to that, the idea that the site was really going to control most of the outcome of the wines I was making. But having experience with Merlot on hillsides, mountains, valley floor, you know, like I said, Napa to Sonoma, throughout Sonoma County, you know, there are these nuances that you can sort of craft and bring out of the fruit. And I want it to not only keep a little something of the past in the ground with some of those clones, but also bring some new, interesting, potentially, you know, very unique clones as well. And really sort of like Sonoma County, it's so diverse. And I always break it down in like these different regions provide different flavors and different aromatics in general. And so Merlot for me had this one particular style or sort of aroma and flavor and sort of mouthfeel but I wanted to see if I could push that a little bit further by bringing in some different material that would allow for some creativity and doing something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. What is that flavor or mouthfeel that you're looking for? Yeah. How do you describe Merlot?
It's a great question. How do you describe Merlot? And I think it runs the gamut of a lot of our classic Bordeaux varieties. There are some nice, you know, for me, Merlot, more than, say, Cabernet and anything else, you know, plums and cherries definitely come to the forefront. But there's this underlying really nice savory character, not, you know, fresh cut green herbs, but like sort of dried thyme and those sort of herbs that are always underlying. I think that's really particular to Sonoma Valley, where we are growing this Merlot versus other regions that could push a little bit more brighter red fruit to the plant. I think it's a nice balance. You get some of those olive characters, but really this nice savory note, and then really trying to eke that fruit out to the forefront, so that as the wine ages, you know, 10 plus years, 20 years, you know, that it still showcases some of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like Merlot because I feel like it's always approachable, like with food on its own, where I sometimes feel with a Cabernet or something, it does need to be open longer, or it needs more time, where I feel like I can open a young or an aged Merlot. And
I think the tannins can be so much more resolved,
yes,
right, in a Merlot, which is why it's just sort of shocking that it fell out of any kind of favor at any point, because it sort of gives you everything that a lot of the other Bordeaux varieties give you, and yet a little bit more of that approachability with food, a little easier to just kind of understand and enjoy. And I would imagine that's what you're trying to achieve when you make these wines. What do you like about, or what are some of the challenges about making Merlot?
I mean, some of those challenges, you know, outside of the vineyard, which Jacob
framed
definitely
positively,
talk
because it is the good stuff. So, I mean,
no
opportunities.
Just
with the Merlot.
What are the amazing things about making Merlot?
I think it opened itself to being a standalone varietal for sure, and we do a lot of that with our Merlot. A lot of standalone 100% varietally, you know, bottled Merlot. It is a great blender as well into other wines. It can sometimes work really well with Malbec and you know, the sort of thing. So it's a little bit of everything. It really is a sandbox of just opportunity to have fun with.
And I think the danger of Merlot sometimes is people think of it as this baby Cabernet, mm-hmm. and I think it does have some of these other characteristics, like this beautiful olive and red fruits that are not. It's not necessarily a lighter version of another Bordeaux.
So they should go out there and Merlot me, and then that way they will know for themselves. It's not a baby cab.
Okay. On that, I think we're going to take a quick break and think about baby cabs. And when we come back, we'll talk with Jake a little bit more about the vineyard side and what it takes to plant a great Merlot vineyard and honor some of that history and yet be innovative and forward-looking. So join us. You're listening to The Good Stuff. I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz of Sonoma County Wine Growers. And our guests today are Chris Luton and Jake Terrell of St. Francis Winery and Vineyards. When we took a break, we were talking to Chris a lot about just the making of Merlot. But now we want to switch over to Jake and talk about the growing of Merlot and the planting of Merlot. Because you replanted sort of a historic vineyard in the Sonoma Valley.
Yeah.
Recently, so tell us a little bit about what that took. What was the decision before you decided to replant?
The vineyard was planted in 1971, and there's a bunch of replants in the vineyard. And you know, in the last 50 years, there's been a lot of advances in viticulture. So we decided to jump in and replant it. I mean, the wine is actually coming off. It was still great, but as you can imagine, yields with an old vineyard go down and down. So
paint the picture. Like, what was the row spacing and that? Like,
I want to get real nerdy.
I want to get nerdy. Yeah. I want to get you're a grower expert. Yeah. So let's nerd out.
Back in the 70s, well, of course, this county was agriculture other than grapes for the most part. And of course, it's become much more grapes now. The tractors were large because they're planting orchards. So there were 12-foot rows. So huge rows. Now we're almost half that. So we're at 7-foot rows now. Okay. So it was 12-foot rows, and it was a split canopy. So if you look down the row, it's divided laterally. And so
there's a lot of hand gestures going on out there, just so you know.
So it was a divided canopy. We call it a lyre system, L-Y-R-E.
I have not heard that.
Yeah, a lyre system. Made after the very smart Henry Lyre. I just made that up.
Booker T. Lyre.
Yeah, Booker T. Lyre. It was a great vineyard. But as the guys would pick grapes, they would duck their heads underneath the canopy to move the fruit from one row to the other in the picking tubs, and they would hit their heads. So hence, Chris, my companion here, was talking about the hard hats. So they had to pick with hard hats on.
Oh my gosh!
It was So we decided to replant it over 2 years. The vineyard's this beautiful alluvial soil. The middle of Kenwood is a big alluvial fan off of Sugarloaf State Park. So if any of the listeners have been out to that area, you'll see that's that beautiful rounded river cobble, and this vineyard's planted right on top of that. So it's kind of the perfect spot for Merlot. It's similar to that right bank of Bordeaux, which that Chris was alluding to. It's not too hot, not too cold, kind of that Goldilocks area.
That Goldilocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did it over 2 years. The road direction was
why 2 years? Why did it take 2 years? What's
it
that?
Was? It's a large vineyard. It's almost 100 acres. So, okay. Just not to disrupt production as much. Mm-hmm. And honestly, to get that much clonal material. Yeah. So we buy all of our vineyards from the local Nova Vine. A little shout out to Nova Vine. Mm-hmm. We just figured make it easier on them doing
the plant
that many vines because. there's not that. There's plenty of budwood of Merlot out there, but we were buying a lot of vines.
Did you keep any? Did you bud over or graft out from anything that you...
All new.
All
so,
new.
Yep.
Okay.
Virus is a big challenge for with sure. wine grapes, so we want to make sure we're planting with clean material. And I would say virus robs the vineyard of its terroir. If you end up not tasting the site, you taste the effects of virus. So...
Damn thieves.
Yeah. So we planted a bunch of really cool clones in Merlot, some Italian clones that were produced over at the Rosciato Nursery in Italy, 181, a bunch of cool nerdy clones we can get into.
How did you choose? What was like?
A little bit of everything.
I mean, some of it was like what's available. And go through a long list. How
supply
much history can you raise?
Supply
demand. And then like knowing we wanted some diversity and going outside of some of the norms. So we got, you know, French clones and Italian clones and you know, and when you read about these things, I mean, they make you drool. I mean, you want to drink the paper. It looks so good. So you're like, I really hope this comes to fruition in the vineyard. And actually is different. And I know it's hard to believe, but they really are different. They do present. And now we're just getting to the point where we can expect what to expect, if that makes sense, right? We kind of know what they
There's
are turning to.
There's some typicity in the
blocks now. Yeah. And I had to be kind of friendly to Jake. We could only divide up 100 acres so many times.
Yeah.
So eventually he probably had to say stop.
That's like a whole nother show. Yeah. What's it like to work with Jake?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a late night. It's a late night show.
I think he's going to have to bring a few more bottles for that. But, well, I mean, you think about some of these vineyards that were planted in the early 70s, and I imagine, talk about access to plant material, very different in those days. And I imagine a lot of the planting was done by intuition, sort of what had maybe been there at some point before, maybe what your neighbors were doing. But now you have so much more science and technology to use to sort of look at the soils. It sounds like you did do that. You looked a lot at soils. You looked a lot at air temperatures, a lot at pests, a lot of, so what were the factors that you looked at to sort of make the best decision you could?
Yeah, I think that we, one of the main things was getting the soils completely mapped out. And if you ever see a vineyard and the blocks are perfectly square, it always annoys me because soils are, of course, not square. So these blocks have, we try to make the delineations of blocks roughly on the soil changes so that we are picking soils separately. So obviously there's a general, alluvial soils we have there, but there's going to be changes in different amounts of clay, different amounts of gravel, sand, all that stuff. So we're really trying to have different blocks of grapes based on soil type. So so that was one of the big ones. One of the biggest things is changing the row orientation. So the row orientation was the exact wrong orientation before. And so in the northern hemisphere, the optimum row direction for grapes is about 10 degrees off north, which was exactly the opposite. So it actually worked out great because there's a road going down right down the middle that was 10 degrees off north. So we changed our orientation so that the sun comes up on the shade on the morning side and goes down on the sun side, but not hard. I'm using my hands. It doesn't work on a radio show.
I can totally picture
but,
it.
But so that was one of the big ones. We also use some cross arms as well to kind of shade some of the fruit to make sure we're not getting too much sun on Merlot. Merlot is, I think, does well in more of a moderate climate, not a very hot area. Mm-hmm. And this little part of downtown Kenwood is a kind of a nice moderate temperature. I should mention this. I don't know if we talked about this. The vineyard's called Behler, Behler, that we've been referring to this whole time. And it's right across the street from the tri-tip trolley, if anyone's familiar in Kenwood. So, yeah.
I think what Jake's leaving out too is the growing of Merlot is different than say Cabernet or Sauvignon Blanc. We refer to it as sort of the lazy floppy variety when it grows. It does not like
lazy fruit.
Lazy fruit, right? So we had to like give it some extra wires and infrastructure to kind of get this canopy to grow up a little bit instead of coming out and sort of flopping all over, getting into vine row. So there was a little bit of challenge, and it's something different we did in that vineyard than we do in say if we were planting Cabernet or any other variety.
We have six movable wires on this canopy to make sure that it doesn't flop. We call it a trailing variety, so it just kind of grows and flops down. It doesn't grow nice and straight up erect like Cabernet does or Sauvignon Blanc does.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things we did to make sure that fruit zone remains uniform. I think uniformity is really the key to growing. And I think that's one of the things with Merlot you got to really think about is what changes you can make to the canopy to make sure you have that nice dappled sunlight on those clusters.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like a lot of these decisions do speak to the sustainability over the long term of this vineyard, you know, maybe getting a longer life, better fruit, healthier fruit. What else have you sort of done to the vineyard to make it more sustainable?
Yeah, we used, I think, the correct rootstocks for that area. So the rootstocks, we plant grapevines on American rootstocks and graft them to these French hybrids like Merlot. I shouldn't say hybrids, French varieties like Merlot. This rootstocks we used, we actually can dry farm this property. So we almost never irrigate it, a few times a year. So I don't want to say dogmatically we dry farm, but I think that was one of the big ones with sustainability there.
In my understanding, I've had people tell me that Merlot does not like its feet wet.
Yeah, no Vitis vinifera does. No grapes, I think wine grapes do. But Merlot can become very vigorous. And if you ever had a Merlot that's really green and kind of innocuous and boring, it's probably too vigorous and had wet feet.
Okay.
Yep. I don't really like wet feet either. I'm just going to go on record.
Okay. Well,
that's
fair.
Not the good stuff. Wet feet.
That's the bad stuff. all right. Well, we are going to take another break. And when we come back, we're still going to talk about Merlot, but we might ask a couple other questions.
I think we're
going to
do some
guests.
Fun. I know. Yeah. We'll just shake it up.
We'll shake
Hope
it up.
Hope they're ready.
Would you rather?
it could be that. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Listening to The Good Stuff. I'm here with Carissa Cruz and our friends from St. Francis, Chris and Jake, who we've been talking about all things Merlot. But we brought up this thing called Merlot Me early on and
celebrated in the month of October.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Give us a little more detail?
Okay, so you know, I actually had to go to the source, the internet, and look it up. So Merlot Me says, to be a part of the Merlot movement, you can do three things. Get your hands on a bottle of Merlot, which we should just mention. We are all drinking Merlot right now. So yeah. What are we drinking from St. Francis?
This is our 2019 Beeler Vineyard Merlot. So
excellent.
This is the wine we've been, the
single vineyard.
The vineyard we've been referring to all Saturday.
So very excited. So we've accomplished step one of Merlot Me and supporting the Merlot movement. You can also share your stories. I think it's a hashtag Merlot Me.
For those of you who enjoy, like Jake, sharing a good social message.
I think of myself as a micro-influencer.
Absolutely.
Maybe macro.
When I think Sonoma County influencer, I just picture you, Jake.
I think you're a Merlot influencer.
You didn't have to say that.
Merlot influencer. Clearly the Merlot is hitting us.
It is.
Okay. And the final, it says, chat with fellow Merlot lovers online, but I'm just going to say, maybe you should just find some friends, go to dinner, and enjoy a nice bottle or Merlot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, stop looking at your phone.
Stop looking at your computer.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you do want to enjoy St. Francis Merlot, how do we find you?
www.stfranciswinery.com be the way online.
Join us at the winery
on Kenwood. Highway 12, just outside of Kenwood, here in Sonoma County.
And will they get to meet with both of you and learn the secret Merlot Me handshake so they can be part
of the club? That's the only way to get in the door, actually.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, now I think we want to totally shift gears.
We do.
For fun.
We haven't been silly enough. So
I know.
We need to maybe get to the silly part of the show.
So we created some random questions that are really random.
Are they random or are they fun?
I don't know. I think that's going to depend on their answers.
Out.
No pressure.
No, I'm nervous.
No pressure. Do you want to start or do you want me to?
I want you to.
Okay, question one. We're going to start with Chris, but Jake, you're following up with an answer immediately.
All right.
So far, it's October. We're in harvest. So how would you describe this year's harvest as an amusement park ride?
Ooh, it's that's a great question. This year's harvest was sort of like the ride, you're anticipating it, and it's kind of like those old school roller coasters that make a
yeah.
And we were on that for probably way too long. Yeah. It felt just like we were never going to get to that fun whoosh part, which we finally get to, right?
Yeah, but I think you're kind of in the middle of the whoosh right now. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, but a lot of that clackety clackety waiting, anticipation climbing. As that stomach nervousness grows and grows. That was this year's harvest ride for me.
Yeah, I think the Splash Mountain. So it's just slow, kind of going through the woods, and then ends with a huge bang. So.
Okay. So I feel like every harvest is like a tilt-a-wheel. Like,
Yeah. Not a haunted house.
Not a haunted house.
Let's hope. All right, Jake, we'll start with you. If you had to describe what you do to a six-year-old, what would it be?
Oh, I just play with my dog in the vineyard.
Nice.
I think most kids have science class, and I think farming is just applied science. So getting out and getting your hands dirty and growing things.
Cool. Chris, what about you?
I get to make adult grape juice.
Good answer. Yeah.
Good answer. All right. So I always think this is fun. What music? What's on your, on your music playlist for farming during harvest and for winemaking? Yeah, gotta be honest. Chris is laughing right now, so I'm gonna just start with Chris.
Oh, because we were talking about this before we came in. Yeah, in terms of genres of music.
Yeah.
In my car, during it's an eclectic kind of maybe like the tilt-a-whirl, right?
Yeah.
You feel things at different moments. So I'll splash through, Alt Nation on the satellite radio, indie rock. I mean, I'll hit country rock. And that's why I'm laughing, because my friend over here
just talking about my disdain for
not even
music.
Know there's a station out there.
Yeah.
You don't like, you're a farmer. You
like old
country.
Old 70s
gosh.
Country's great.
Yeah.
That works.
Chris Stapleton's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. That's like new old, though. He's like that throwback feel.
I think that's where we fell into agreement on that genre.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to come up with some more playlists, I think.
I know. Yeah. I like it.
All right. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the show. We want to thank our guests today on the Good Stuff Hour, Chris Luton and Jake Terrell from St. Francis Winery and Vineyards, for talking with us about all things Merlot, including Merlot Me.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Absolutely. And now I think, Carissa, we need to talk about Tuesday Night Wine.
Yeah. So it's been really fun drinking the St. Francis Merlot from Beeler Vineyard. So we've been talking about that vineyard the whole show. Very exciting. So I'm staying in the Merlot. I'm finding my social Merlot Me moment. So I am going to pull out of our cellar a 2013 Kenwood, so a neighbor down the street from St. Francis. And it's their Merlot from Sonoma Mountain. So I'm putting that on tap for Tuesday night, and I'm going to go to MerlotMe.com and find some friends and talk about it. So not weird at all, people. Yeah. Not weird at all. So maybe I'm just going to celebrate with a picture and maybe a hashtag MerlotMe and maybe tag my friends Jake and Chris over here.
Well, I think
Tuesday.
I don't want to be left out of the hashtag MerlotMe situation. So maybe I'll bring it back to a show that we did last week with Duff Bevel, Dry Creek Vineyard.
Oh yeah.
Dry Creek Vineyard Winery has a long history with Merlot as well. So that's what I'm going to break out. We'll just be all over those hashtags.
I love it. Well, I guess I'll see you on the hashtag socialmerlotme.com.
Well, yeah.
So there's that. Anyway, I was just going to reiterate, if you want to visit our friends or get some St. Francis Merlot or some of their other fabulous wines, you go to stfranciswinery.com to learn more, to buy, to visit all great things, and to learn the secret Merlot Me handshake.
Yeah.
And if you want to look at some more Good Stuff content, we have it at sonomawinegrape.org. Check out some previous columns, some of which do talk about Merlot.
Absolutely. And probably more now, because you have a whole following and a momentum.
I think it's all I'm
going to
do.
It's a movement, the Merlot movement.
October Merlot Me. All right, thanks for joining us, everyone, on the Good Stuff Hour today. Thank you to our guests. Thank you, Carissa. Anything else to leave everyone with?
No, I mean, it's October. We're harvesting still, given the late start. So, I mean, I think we're just seeing some of the first Merlot actually come in Sonoma Valley, which is a little later than normal. But that's... I shouldn't say that, later than last year, later than the last couple of years, more normal timing. But I know our growers are still anticipating a few weeks left of harvest. It's kind of been the long, slow season. Like they said, the old creaky roller coaster slash splash mountain ride, for sure.
All right. Well, cheers. And remember, everyone, to always drink the good stuff.
Cheers.